All right, Mr. Chairman, your recording is 1 o'clock. You can begin.
All right, thanks, Jack. We'll go ahead and call the meeting to order, and please go ahead and do a roll call.
I will take care of the roll call, Mr. Chairman. Jagadishan Krishnamurthy.
Here.
Ryan Kirkland. Eddie Cook.
Here.
Jeffrey Fleetham.
Here.
David Byers.
Here.
Tim Romer.
I'm here.
Lev Gonick.
Here.
J.R. Sloan.
Here.
Representative Wynn. Senator Gray. Rebecca Pereira for Richard Stavnik.
Here.
Mr. Chairman, you have a quorum.
Thanks, Chuck. Everybody, welcome. Thank you for being here today. I will go ahead and remind everyone this is a public meeting and we follow the public meeting rules and format. On the agenda, you will see there's a link. If you have a comment you wish to submit, please use that comment form and the team will disposition the comment for us. We'll go ahead and move into our first item of business, which will be approval of our June 15th recording as our official minutes for our last meeting. There isn't any discussion. I'll take a motion with regards to that.
Mr. Chairman, I make a motion to approve the minutes from last meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Romer. Do we have a second?
Second.
Thank you, Mr. Fleetham. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, that's a unanimous vote. With that, we will go ahead and step into our first voting item on the agenda, which is the Department of Administration bringing forward the HRIS Modernization Project.
Good afternoon. Excuse me. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Bob Mussey, and I'm an engagement manager with the Department of Administration. I'm also joined here today by members of the Department of Administration who will introduce themselves shortly, followed by a brief overview of the project. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, the Arizona Department of Administration is requesting the project investment justification approval to implement a modern human resources information system. The new system will improve the tools available to the human resource staff, allowing the state to carry out efficient and compliant HR services. At this time, I'll turn it over to the project team to present additional information regarding the proposed project and answer any questions you may have.
Excellent, Bob. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, is it okay if I begin with the introductions?
Please go ahead, Emily.
Thank you. Well, good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Emily Radjukovic, and I am the State Human Resources Director working out of the Department of Administration. And I can't tell you how pleased I am to be before you today with this request for a new human resources information system. A long time coming and much needed for the state as we prioritize supporting our very talented workforce and giving them the tools to empower their work and experience as a state employee. So I will introduce our project team here, and then we will be happy to answer any questions that you may have. So first up, I'd like to introduce Kimberly Beach, our project manager. Kimberly has a distinguished career in large human resources IT projects, most recently coming off a project with Banner Health as their technology lead. And she had the responsibility of implementing a similar HRIS project and did so successfully. So we're very glad that we were able to bring Kim on board. Jody Lauer is the state's HRIS program manager. She's the state's foremost expert on everything HRIS has been with the state for many years and has supported the initial implementation of our current HRIS system, We're very lucky to have her as our program manager. She has private sector experience, and I know the expertise and relationships and networks to implement such an important project for the state. And before I introduce Victor, I just want to make a note that we do have John Redhorse on this call should we have questions about the procurement of the system. So John, thank you for joining us, and Jacob Wingate, the DOA CFO, on any questions that may come up on the budget side. So Jacob, thank you so much. But last, certainly not least, Victor Carrasco, our HRIS technology manager. He will lead you through the presentation. Victor is head of a very talented technical team supporting our current HRIS system. He was instrumental in the procurement of our proposed new system, and has been just working on the development and creating the business case for a new HRIS system for the state for several years. So a very sophisticated and high-level leader in the HRIS IT space. So with that, Victor, I will turn it over to you to lead through the presentation. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Emily. Next slide, please. So good afternoon. My name is Victor Carrasco. As Emily said, I'm the ADOA HRIS Technical Senior Manager. Before I get started with the brief in earnest, I'd like to kind of level set to make sure everyone has a clear understanding of what HRIS is, and give you some background on our current system. So HRIS is the system of record for all employee and position data, meaning it's the ground truth fed into the other interfacing systems. Our current HRIS provides HR, payroll, benefits capabilities to employees, retirees, and to university employees for benefits. Yes, is where our employee manager self-service portal is. Through that, we can look at paycheck, leave balances. As a manager, you can look at your employees' leave position data, or you can access training. A holistic HRIS will provide every function an organization could need during the employee lifecycle, and that's from hire to retire. Okay, so that takes us to our issue. What is our issue? Our system was implemented in 2003, and so in the past, and since then, we've taken measures to solve problems, whether it be from the system being incomplete or a problem faced because the system doesn't provide the business functionality to the specification that we want. So we've either tailored the functionality to meet customer needs via customization, and we have many, or we've procured third-party applications to fill the gaps in functionality. A good example of that is PageUp for our job board, or ProcessMaker for the remote work agreement, or AZ Performs, right? And so what that does is that turns that application into a best of breed, which we want to steer away from. So those methods ultimately become cumbersome and costly, as the effort to maintain those customizations or integrations with third-party applications increases with each upgrade. And you can see there that we also have been notified by the vendor that our application will soon reach end of life. That's for our on-premise version. We'd be forced to do some type of upgrade, potentially to the cloud. This leaves the state at risk on an unsupported platform, which we want to avoid. So with that said, leadership decided the best solution was to go RFP for an entirely new state-of-the-art HRIS. The benefits of a new HRIS, benefits to the state and its constituents would be, we'd be fully supported by the vendor. We would be receiving regularly released upgrades and new functionality. So the team would enter a cycle of releases, evaluating those vendor releases, and then implementing those continually, taking advantage of the latest and greatest improvements the vendor has to offer. The environment itself would be maintained and supported by the vendor, which includes their network and infrastructure improvements. We'd be able to take advantage of the offered operational efficiencies with built-in workflows, saving a lot of manual effort. And we'd be able to take advantage of the vendor's cloud. It's scalable and redundant, which is important in this day and age. And finally, security. The solution is FedRAMP and ASRAMP authorized. Next slide, please. So after a competitive, successful RFP solicitation, the state has selected CGI's Advantage HRM. CGI solution is full scale, it's integrated single platform cloud solution. And as you can see, the functionality on the left there, it covers the breadth that we're looking for. On the right side, you can see some of the other benefits that it brings to the table. It aligns with the state's cloud first policy. It is ADA compliant, which has been a continuous struggle for the state in terms of our current HRIS. Employees can access via user-friendly interface using multiple device types, such as smartphones and tablets. Key benefit is that it directly integrates with our current financial system, AFIS. And again, I want to ping on, most importantly, we're going to be receiving those regularly scheduled upgrades, minimizing or getting rid of those customizations. So we get to update, assess, and configure. Next slide, please. So this program structure and associated functions with the program structure are what drive this project. Just to highlight some of these, up in the upper left corner, you can see oversight. That is why I'm here today presenting to you. ITAC, JLDC, they're going to provide approval for changes, in, whether it be in scope, schedule, budget, as needed. Oversight also includes the asset engagement and oversight teams under JR. The PMO, beneath that, the PMO is going to be responsible for the daily project execution and associated tasks. Right in the middle of the slide there, you'll see the various committees, starting with the Project Advisory Committee. That is comprised of key business decision makers to include agency CHROs and CFOs. Above that, you'll see Executive Steering Committee. This is comprised of ADOA executives along with key agency directors. Emily Radjakovic, HRD Director, who just spoke before and introduced everybody, has an actionable engagement plan to inform those agency directors once we receive final approval. Taking us to the right side of that slide, governance. So in the currently, we're in the midst of an IV&V RFP solicitation. That selected vendor will report up through the exec on project execution, risk identification, and mitigation, and they'll ensure that the state project team is on top of execution. Anything that is subpar, is reported up, escalated through the execs with recommendations for corrective action. Down below that, we have change management, communication, and training. Change management is the key role in project success out at the agency, which goes hand in hand with communications and training. And we have personnel identified for each of these roles. Next slide, please. Okay, so these are roles and project responsibilities continued, but I'd like you to pay particular attention to the agency involvement. As you saw on the previous slide, we have the exec engagement. They're going to be championing the project and consulting with the project team, providing some resolution potentially. But out at the agencies is where the business is done. And so we're enacting project success teams, which will be made up of key talent at the agency, whether it be an HR payroll or IT personnel. This is going to be made up of the subject matter experts, and we're going to lean on them and discuss how the processes are done out at the agency. We're going to take that input and incorporate it into our design. So those agency personnel will take part in the design and testing of the processes. And then the project champions out at the agencies will make sure that the agency is informed and engaged. Next slide. So looking at the project timeline, it's comprised of phase 1A, phase 1B, 2A, 2B. Phase 1A is approximately 24 months, and that is 24 months beginning in August with a ramp up of resource alignment. We got to sit with the vendor and align all our resources, see what this actual timeline is going to look like in terms of, you know, assigning those resources. It includes all the core processes for a functioning ERP, payroll, core HR, benefits, time and labor, you can see, and reporting. That will be followed by hypercare. Hypercare is the hands-on treatment for the newly implemented modules. So they'll be, you know, helping out and assisting with any issues that come up for phase one, and that is for a period of 3 months. And that 3 months is extendable. It is extendable as needed in 3 month increments, which will be determined by the project team, comfort level of the state, and on the business and tech side. For phase 1B is implementing talent, performance learning, and employee relations. That's approximately 9 months, and again, followed by a hypercare period of 3 months, which is also extendable by 3 month periods as needed. You can see the key phase activities listed below. Each phase will contain some iteration of the noted key phase activities, but not all potentially, and vendor will implement using their proven hybrid methodology. So they'll be using Agile and waterfall techniques. Next slide, please. Okay, project costs. I'd like you to pay particular attention to fiscal year 23, column fiscal year 23, second from the bottom line. That is our total development cost. So we have 3 years of development with year one coming in at $18.6 million, year two at $12.3, year three at $13.3, which will take us to go live in fiscal year 26, early fiscal year 26. And then when we post go live, we'll be at our operational subscription costs, which are approximately $5 million per year. So the projected total cost, which is those 3 years of development plus the two operational, takes us to just over $54 million. Next slide, please. Okay, so what does success look like for this project? Bottom line, we won't be in the same situation we're in now. Out of the agency, we're going to have informed agencies. They're going to know what is coming and what is expected of them in relation to the project. We'll have an agency that is eager to participate in testing and providing, you know, that valuable feedback from that testing. Agency adoption of the new processes and culture change associated with those processes is key. And we'll also have no more agency leadership trying to fill gaps on their own by building manual process workarounds or procuring third-party applications. So definite benefits out of the agency. In terms of the project, we'll follow industry best practices during implementation concerning the system. We'll minimize third-party interfaces. We'll stick to standard delivered functionality and focus on configuration instead of customization. This provides long-term sustainability with the flexibility to flex to the needs of the, you know, changing workforce. So ultimately, all of these together will save the state and its agencies, you know, time and effort. Next slide, please. Okay, at this time, I'd like to answer any questions.
Okay, we will open up to the committee for questions. Mr. Byers, you had your hand up.
Yeah, actually, I've got a series of questions just to understand a little bit more. This is a project that's interest to a lot of people, I think. So, Victor, does this replace the current YES system?
Yes, sir, it will.
Also, that'll be a nice thing because that's a pretty clunky system. So that'll be well received. Can you go back to the budget slide, the cost slide? So what I was looking at was in like the out years, there's a number like 3.5, 3.8 million. I thought those would be your software as a service subscription fees, but you mentioned 5 million. So once you installed, what's the software subscription ongoing cost?
We're just, excuse me, this is Jacob Wingate, ADOA CFO. Was the question just for that ongoing cost for the software itself, the hosting?
Yeah, because I see you've got personnel servers. I assume that's like maybe your personnel cost, and then there's other operating costs. But what's the subscription cost that you pay the vendor every year for you know, using the software?
That's that number, yes.
So is that, so if you divide that by the 44,000 people in it, it's about $80 a ploy per year, which seems to me pretty reasonable. But how's that priced for you guys? Is that like per person that's in the system, per employee, or is it based on users? What's your agreement with them in terms of how you got to that price?
It is a fixed fee. So when we did the procurement, we required the vendor to submit their fixed prices for, I believe, the first 15 years. And that's the number with taxes added.
But does that mean you have like an unlimited license? You know, because usually these things are priced where you could have, you know, 1,000 users at DOA or 100. And if you add more, you got to pay more. So how, is that like an enterprise license so that every future employee could use it and everybody at DOA can use it without the price going up?
This might be a question for John on the contract term as it relates to that cap, if we do have a cap. Is John available?
Yeah, I'm here. I'd have to take a look within the statement of work. I do believe that it was priced around for a level of employee count. So not specifically on like named users, but just, you know, the state has, I'm going to throw a number out, I highly doubt it's accurate, 30,000 employees, 50,000 employees. So this pricing fell within the range that we specified in the RFP.
Yeah, well, your PowerPoint said 44,000 employees. So it's within that range. And you probably have, you could, if you had employee, well, the state's been shrinking. Let's say we added, you could contain that within that price to some amount. Or you're not going to get, let's say we had 5,000 new employees in the state, you're not going to have a fee increase that's unexpected. It would be part of that.
It should be within it. It wasn't necessarily set for a hard line amount. I mean, you know, we pretty much gave that range. I don't know if an increase in 5,000, as you said, we're going to have, you know, some shrinkage, some folks coming back on. I'd have to take a look back into the statement of work to find out the levels that we gave for the RFP.
Okay, well, maybe you could follow up with me. That would be fine. And then I see the prices going up, so there must be some escalator. Do you know what the escalator is? So every year, what's the contract call for the escalation in that service fee? Is it capped at anything?
Yeah, it's not necessarily, it's not a year over year specifically. It doesn't go up every year. It goes in, I think, 5-year chunks. And so it'll go up by about $250,000 in years 5 to 10, and then again from 10 to 15.
And so this is going to be a 15-year contract. That's interesting. Because I see like from 2026 to 2027, it's going up. So I'm assuming there was some kind of escalator there. You're saying it's like 5-year increments.
For the latter parts of the contract, yes, that's correct.
Well, I appreciate it. I, if you could follow up, I'm in the process. We're also looking at a project, and it's a software as a service. So it's helpful to me to not only review yours, but to get some scope in my mind for what we're negotiating. So thanks for the answering the questions.
All right, thanks, Mr. Byers. We'll go to Eddie and then Rebecca.
Mr. Chair, looking through the presentation and through the pitch, I did not see that the vendor was identified from the RFP.
So I think early in the presentation, I think it was on the second slide, Eddie, that it's a CGI.
Was the
awarded vendor.
Okay. Thank you.
Rebecca?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One question for probably Jacob. Is going back to the once it goes live, that $5 billion operating cost, how does that compare to what you're currently paying to operate HRIS in total between the licensing costs and the personal services?
This is the net new cost. It does not include, this is the kind of the gross new cost. So we would net out of here from the licensing costs, the portion that we're paying to the current HRIS vendor, which is around $2 million.
Okay, so the net is really based on the software as a service, not on the personal services and ERE.
Yes, the net would be applied to that. Yep.
Okay, thank you. I do have a second question, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
And my second question is for asset. Normally we see an IVNB for projects over 5 million prior to the start of a project. Has that been completed? And what were the results of that?
So Mr. Chairman, I can take that one for the record. Chuck Brown, WCIO for asset. So the IVNB responses are back. We have 5 of them in selection right now. So we have it ready to go. You'll see a special condition on this and approval that we have the first report within 90 days. So we have, I believe, 4 or 5 responses we can choose from within that task order. Any follow-up that I didn't cover?
Is that typical to not award before making, I thought that usually we see the first one as part of, or I thought that was the intent of statute.
So normally we put the contract in place. What we're dealing with here is an award that happened a very short time ago. So we couldn't conclude the full IVNB, right? We've been working through that process. That's why we have it lined up with the special condition in this case so that approval and project can move forward. IVNB is ready to go at the kickoff of the project. But traditionally, the contract's in place at ITAC approval, not the first report. The first report comes within the quarter after beginning the project.
Okay, thanks. Mr. Fleetum.
Yes, thank you very much. And Director, the HR system is, I know my HR manager is going to love the change. It takes some Herculean effort to operate in the current system that we have now. One of the things, and I may have missed it, I tried reading through this and listening to the presentation. I know there's in my office, there's a ton of paper files. They're everywhere. And it's probably not unlike many other agencies, except we're way smaller. I didn't notice any sort of provision for some sort of cloud-based system to handle all of these files so that I know my agency is a little different, but we have some HR managers that travel around to other agencies. Do they need to carry paper files with them, or will there be a way that they can access these files through the cloud, through the internet somehow?
I can take that. Yes, we are going to, part of this solution is to have the workflows and the processes all a part of the HRIS system so that it's all mobile capable, that we have the ability to have the files at the ready, so to speak, or even scanned and stored within the system. So yes, reduction of paperwork and ease of use.
So the goal of this new system is to eliminate the paper and go completely electronic or cloud-based. Pardon me, I don't use all the correct terms all the time.
Well, we'll call it a digital employee record.
Yeah, the employee record. So the employee record is cloud-based. No longer will we need to keep these massive massive amount of files, correct?
Correct.
I've got so I'm going to have a very happy HR manager. Thank you. So
we sure hope so.
So I missed that. Was that listed in the presentation or just assumed? Did I miss? I didn't miss it. It was someplace in there. It was assumed that that's going on. So
I don't know that it explicitly brought that up. But that is one of the things about being, is the cloud focus and the document management. Yes.
Nice. Okay.
That's part of it. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And Director Fleetham, if I could just jump in here for a second. Absolutely. We're cloud first focused. We'll have electronic processes. The business processes that your agency may use now will be part of the conversations on mapping those out. So we're fully aware with the new system. And also I can't remember, Victor, you probably mentioned this, but it is mobile friendly. So our smartphones, our tablets, we're hoping it's much easier for employees who don't typically work at a computer all day, that they're out in the field working with our customers. It'll be easier for them to access.
Nice. Thank you very much.
Okay, Mr. Byers.
Yeah, do you know how many terabytes of storage they've provided for these costs, the project?
We do have that information. Jody, I'm not sure if you have it at your fingertips there.
Let me look that up real quick. We did include in additional, as part of the negotiations, additional storage for what we currently have for our HRIS system and in our talent management systems, did factor in for growth of that, and to also have that additional capability within the data lake that will be supplied as part of this offering. So I know that we had 2.5 terabytes of data and 4 terabytes of data in our learning management system as well. So all that was accounted for. I can get, let me pull up some more information, but we did make sure that that was accounted for and for growth as well.
So you'd have
to-
You'd have 6.5 terabytes, sounds like, for data and documents, because it sounds like a lot of the executive agencies are paper files that you're going to have to scan. And I assume you're going to keep employee records for some number of years, so this will grow and grow until you're able to delete records, right? Do you know what the cost of additional terabytes is under this contract?
Yeah, and I think, Mr. Byers, I think there's also the case of, in some cases, agencies have created paper copies of what is a digital file for their own convenience. Uh-huh. And it may not be net different from what's in the current system and will be migrated over. So that's part of the processes that need to be reconciled through the business process review and the implementation process with the provider and the working with the agencies, so that, to your point, we do retain those records that are vital, important, and I'll say net different than what the data is in the system. So we have that. But I would also want to make sure that we're not scanning redundant information and creating additional storage requirements unnecessarily.
Yeah, sure. Did you, Jody, be able to find out the cost of adding a terabyte under this vendor?
Yes. Let me just get that on. Let me get right back to you. I've got another screen open to find that on the, the proposal here. I want to get that right number for you. Hold on.
Are there any other questions from the committee at this point?
Who is the cloud provider in this project?
CGI is the cloud provider as well.
So they have their own cloud. They're not using Amazon or Microsoft. They have no cloud. Okay.
Correct. And for what it's worth, this solution is co-located in the same cloud data centers with the state's financial system. I will ask my question, which I think I don't want to distract Jody, so Victor, I'll direct it at you. But which should be, you mentioned along the way, one of the key things, there was an objective is to get our arms around avoiding customization and embracing configuration. Can you talk a little bit to the committee about how that was represented in the RFP and the processes that we expect to undertake to create the alignment to eliminate where we've had customizations in the past and bring what I would hope is the intersection of agency business needs and best practices together?
Yes. So historically, in our current system, we have over 1,200 customizations. These customizations for any given upgrade have to be reevaluated if we are undergoing an upgrade. So is there a change? Is this customization affected? So that is the part that becomes very cumbersome as you're moving forward. We're trying to avoid that. So what we're going to undergo, JR, is business process review, business process design workshops with these agencies. The agencies, which we deem are unique or have very kind of individualistic processes, we're going to engage and on certain business processes. So, you know, we may not engage with DOC on one given process, but on a different one we would. Okay, so that will be determined by the project team. Then we're going to, you know, document how that agency executes that that given business process. The vendor will then say, this is how we deliver this process, you know, via configuration in our current system. So what is that delta now? Can the agency accept that? Is there a business process change that has to happen within that agency? And that's where the organizational change management comes into play. And the project team leaning on those agency SMEs, because there will be process change. It is inevitable. Our agencies, DOA included, are not doing things out at the agencies, which are the most streamlined, most, you know, current effective processes. So we expect to learn something. Those then are going to be designed and tested via UAT, user acceptance testing, out of the agency. Again, those agencies will be engaged for that user acceptance testing and feedback will be received. Does this break the business out of the agencies or is this a effective process? If it is, we move forward and we keep it. And then it is designed and configured for that. Yes, sir, Mr. Byers.
I think that's great. The same thing tends to happen on these projects with reports. So does this system come with some, you know, 1,000 or 100 reports already pre-programmed that are standard with the system?
Sir, they do have pre-delivered reports, which are tailorable to our solution. But one thing that the vendor did point out is these reports would be built as we go along. And so while we're in the midst of designing for these business processes, we're going to be designing for the report. So we're going to take that standard delivered report, configure it how we need to meet our needs, and then move on. So we're not going to get to the end of the project and then think of the reports as an afterthought and have to go back and say, where were we? And let's design to that.
Yeah, that usually happens. So how many different reports do you now have in the current system?
I don't know the exact number. Anybody from the business know that?
There's different reports in the system. I could get a full count. We do have a data warehouse that we have, so they're separated out by different business areas. So HR, you know, has reports like employee position report, time to fill reports. Benefits has a couple of reports that they rely on quite heavily, like a 30-day notices and things like that. I can get that for you.
Well, it's not unusual when you have a legacy system like this to have hundreds, if not thousands, of custom reports by the agency. And I've always looked at is, these new systems tend to come with a lot of canned reports that instead of starting from scratch, you might be able to add a column. But you know, users always want, well, I want it to look this way or that way, and that can become a huge scope creep if you're going to do it. But are you going to do the same thing that Victor was talking about in terms of working with the agencies to try to use the canned reports and maybe modify them and tweak them rather than from scratch?
Yes.
This
is
Kim.
Yes.
Can
I say one other thing too about the business processes as we go through them? Part of what we want to do is take advantage of the new technology within this system. So best practices industry-wide have been defined for HR processes, and we are going to start with that as our baseline, because what we don't want to wind up doing is taking an old process and trying to automate it. We want to make the most efficient way for the agencies to be able to do business. So that will be a good starting point for us and take advantage of what we've purchased here.
I've also got the numbers for you as far as our storage costs. So any additional storage above the above what we've bought is $200 for 100 gigabyte of production data, which it really equates to 1.26 terabytes of storage for our production and our non-production environment. So $200 for 100 gigabyte of production data, which translates into 1.26 terabytes of storage across our production and non-production environment.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Last one, I think is maybe relevant to touch on is, we talked about the operating expenses. How do we perceive that this system, in terms of the personnel that are currently deployed to run the current environment and what our future needs are going to be? Do we see how that either roles will change or that might be restructured?
JR, I can take that one. We don't always want to start with the premise of telling the folks that are going to be helping us build, implement, and deploy this that their job's on the line, for lack of a better way to describe it. But there will be increased efficiencies for the HR community, the payroll, and the benefits side. Plus the efficiencies with the state workforce, just having easier access to do their own self-service, and yes, rather than potentially relying on their HR staff out in the agency. And I also see this as an opportunity to have these services more centralized at DOA potentially, so we can do more that supports the agencies, and they can redeploy those resources for better employee relations, employee management, those retention efforts, better recruitments. So that's how I see this system bringing additional value to the state.
All right, thanks, Emily. Last call, any final questions from the committee? If not, I'll turn it back to you, Bob, to walk us through any conditions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. ASSET is recommending that a PIDGE be approved with the following conditions. Should development costs exceed the approved estimates by 10% or more, or should there be a significant change to the proposed technology scope of work or implementation schedule, the agency must amend the PIDGE to reflect the changes and submit to ADOA ASSET and ITEC if required for review and approval prior to further expenditure of funds. Monthly reporting on the project status is due to ADOA ASSET no later than the 15th of the month following the start of the project. Failure to comply with the timely project status reporting will affect the overall project health. The first status report for this project is due September 15th, 2022. The The agency shall also provide the quarterly independent verification and validation IBNV report via email communication to ADOA Asset 90 days following the start of the project.
Okay, committee, any questions about those conditions? If there are none, I will take a motion with regard to the project.
Mr. Chairman, I'll make a motion to approve with conditions as presented.
Thank you, Director Romer. Do we have a second?
Second, as moved.
Thank you. We'll give that one to you, Director Fleetham. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Thank you very much. That's a unanimous vote. Thanks, DOA team, for your presentation and all the good answers to the questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Real honor to present and answer your questions. Thank you so much for your support in this important project.
All right. Tell you what, before we move on to our next item, Lev, I know you had a time constraint. If you need to bow out, thank you very much for joining us on your vacation. I appreciate it. Chuck, would you please confirm that we still have a quorum?
Mr. Chairman, we do have a quorum. So with Mr. Gonick leaving, we will have 5 voting members.
All right. Thank you very much. Before we head into our next item, I want to go ahead and note that Mr. Cook has let us know he will need to abstain from voting on this next item. So he will probably not be super active in the conversation, but we will go ahead and step forward with the next item from the Department of Economic Security and a change request with regard to their data center storage refresh.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, once again, my name is Bob Mussey. I'm the Engagement Manager of the Department of Administration. I'm joined here today by members of the Department of Economic Security, who will introduce themselves shortly, followed by a brief overview of the project change request. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, the Division of Technology Services is requesting an extension to the end date of the DTS data center storage refresh. This change request will allow the project to complete scope and pay the final invoices. At this time, I'll turn it over to the project team to present additional information regarding the proposed change request and answer any questions you may have.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Clayton Sykes, and I'm the Deputy CIO for the Arizona Department of Economic Security. I have presenting with me today Dwayne Carter, who is the Senior Project Manager for our Storage Refresh Project. Next slide, please. So in June of last year, the department requested permission for and received approval to conduct a hardware refresh of our legacy storage platform. This project included a major migration of all data to a new state-of-the-art disk array. Additionally, one of the key goals of the project was to shift data replication from our on-prem target to a new cloud provider. Next slide, please. This project was requested due to an uptick in hardware failures, and the majority of the storage in the data center was nearing an end of support status. Moreover, we were facing audit-related challenges with our lack of at-rest encryption capabilities and off-site data replication for disaster recovery. Next slide, please. The solution that the agency has deployed has given DES the ability to perform at-rest encryption, and upon completion, will allow for the off-site data replication to our Azure Cloud footprint. Additionally, we have realized a reduction in our overall hardware footprint. We actually went from 4 full 42U racks to a single rack supporting all of DES's production data. Next slide, please. We're presenting today to request an extension to the overall project timeline. During the initial phase of the project, we did have some delays in getting the equipment delivered to Iron Mountain. Additionally, at the onset of the project, we had one of our senior storage engineers contract COVID-19, and he required an extended recovery period. Lastly, we have had several delays in getting the Azure Express route circuits deployed so that we can complete the final phase of the project, which is the actual replication of the data from our presence at Iron Mountain into Azure. As of now, the project does stand at 98% complete, with only this remaining task and the payment of final invoices still outstanding. We're requesting an extension of the overall project to September 30th, with the payment outstanding invoices or completing the payment of outstanding invoices by December 31st. Next slide, please. As of today, the data migration to the new hardware, all software upgrades, and the decommission of the legacy hardware at Iron Mountain has all been completed. The only remaining tasks are the deployment of NetApp Cloud Volumes ONTAP and the actual replication of that data into Azure. Upon the successful completion of all of those tasks, all remaining invoices can be paid. We're essentially looking at 90 days to complete the circuit standup and complete the data replication component, and an additional 90 days to remit final payment. Next slide, please. Now, although we have had a few delays, the project has largely been successful and on time with only a few tasks left to complete. Once again, namely the data replication piece into Azure and final payment. Next slide. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, in summary, we're seeking approval to extend our project timeline to December 31st of this year, which will allow for the completion of the remaining technical tasks as well as final payments to be processed. And at this time, are there any questions?
We'll open up to the committee for any questions you may have with regard to the change request. All right. If there are no questions, I will turn it back to you, Bob.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Asset is recommending that the change request be approved with the following conditions. Should development costs exceed the approved estimates by 10% or more, or should there be significant changes to the proposed technology scope of work or implementation schedule, the agency must amend the PIDGE to reflect the changes and submit to ADOA Asset and ITEC if required for review and approval prior to the further expenditure of funds. Monthly reporting on the project status is due to ADOA Asset no later than the 15th of the month. Failure to comply with timely project status reporting will affect the project health.
All right, any questions with regard to the conditions? If there are none, I'll take a motion with regard to the project.
I'd like to move that we approve with the conditions as presented.
Thank you, Director Fleetham. Do we have a second?
Second.
Thank you, Mr. Byers. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That's a unanimous vote. Thank you. Clayton and Dwayne. We'll try to make you talk more next time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Next two items on our agenda were informational updates. So these are not voting items. Chuck, anything we need to cover here?
Just that the first item is a written update that you received in your communications before the meeting from Department of Education. We're going to see a presentation update from the Department of Economic Security.
Okay.
So we move to that agenda item, Mr. Chairman.
All right. We'll move on to that informational update then.
All right, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, once again, my name is Bob Mussey. I'm an engagement manager with the Department of Administration. I'm joined here today by members of the Department of Economic Security. The team will introduce themselves, then provide the committee with an informational update to the overall status of their Office 365 to Google Workspace project.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you, Bob, for turning it over to us. My name is Mark Darmer. I am the Chief Information Officer for the Department of Economic Security. With me today are Clay Sykes, Carrie Allen, and Raj Collingood. Should you have any questions towards the end of the presentation that we're not able to respond to. As you can see on the slide, so far DES has put 893 staff through the Google Guru and Champion program. We have even more of the DES staff scheduled into the upcoming Google Guru courses. And we have 371 ambassadors assigned across the agency within the divisions to assist the end users with the transition to the Google Workspace of products. Next slide, please. As you recall, we were before the committee just about a month ago requesting to be able to pay for the Microsoft Office licensing cost for the current fiscal year. We appreciate the committee's approval of that, and we are moving forward with the continued transition of the DES team over to the Google Workspace of products. Included in that, we have already reduced our O365 license count by more than 2,700 licenses. As a result of that initiative, DES did identify some hurdles, last minute hurdles that we had to overcome. I want to give kudos to the DES team and also the Google account reps for the state in helping DES to overcome those last minute hurdles and be able to move forward with relinquishing in excess of 2,700 licenses in that first go round. Next slide. As we move forward, the project overall is in a green status. Just a couple of points on this slide to point out. On the risk side, we definitely have identified a need to increase the number of power users of the Google Workspace products. We have partnered with Google to identify some training vendors that would be able to assist the department. We have a heavy dependency on right now on some of the more complex Microsoft Excel application capabilities and also on Microsoft Access. We are working diligently with Google to identify replacement functionality within the Google Workspace of products. That may be data sheets, it may be application sheets, whatever the case may be. We really are endeavoring to move as much away from the Microsoft suite as we can to help reduce those licensing costs for the agency. The other piece is the hurdle that I mentioned was the travel reimbursement process. That document had been in Microsoft Excel and had several call outs to Google Maps and other applications to be able to process those travel reimbursement claims. Our internal staff have worked with DOA. Really appreciate that partnership to be able to recreate that functionality in Google. We are not stopping there. We are viewing that as a stopgap measure. And we have engaged with SpringML, a Google partner, to actually go through and develop a full travel reimbursement application using the Google Workspace products for the agency. And we look forward to having that in place by the end of October. Next slide, please. As you can see, phase one was completed. We've gone through that. We are through phase two now with the user home migration. We have migrated all of our end user personal drives to the Google Drive structure. We are still working on the shared drives. That has proven to be a much more complex engagement. A lot of that has to do with the file structures between Microsoft and Google. And so we are working through that. It is taking a little bit longer than we anticipated, but that is a focus effort for us. And we are partnering with Google to work through those intricacies of that move. The last phase, which will be over the next 12 months, will be the reduction of additional licenses for the agency to remove those O365 licenses and costs from the agency. Next slide, please. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I will turn it back to you and the committee for any questions that anybody may have.
All right. We'll go ahead and open up to the committee for any questions. All right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members of the committee.
All right. Thanks, Mark, for the update. I say, actually, one thing for you. Mentioned, I think it'd be interesting to explore whether the travel expense form that you're looking to build, whether how unique that is to DES versus whether that is something that might be able to be leveraged on a broader scale in the state and eliminate other forms that are less user friendly. So if we can gain a win for other agencies on the tops of the work that you're doing, if it's not too specific to DES, I'd love to explore that.
Mr. Chair, that is actually one of the things, as I was talking with Google and Spring ML, that I wanted to ensure that this application would be able to be used by other agencies, having been at ADOT for a period of time and having gone through the same type of exercise there. Understanding that need, we definitely are looking at making this an application that could be utilized by other state agencies. I am very impressed with Google and the Spring ML partnership. I can tell you that what Spring ML has proposed and is commencing work on will cost less than $60,000 to get through.
Wow.
Which is phenomenal. I have to give a shout out to Google. I went to them and said, you really need to make this as competitive as you possibly can. They worked with their vendor and came back with a very, very cost-effective proposal. So we will absolutely partner with your team at Asset and any of the agencies as we go through this to make sure that it is easily portable over to those other agencies.
Fantastic. Oh, thanks for that, Mark. Appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
Okay. That brings us to the end of our agenda. Do we have anything else, Chuck? Other than I think our next meeting is scheduled for August 17th.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. And just a note, a new delivery that the committee's put out there for the public is you streamed this not only on the Google Workspace platform, but you also streamed it out to YouTube for public to have full visibility on this. This was our first meeting, so that will be in place go forward for the committee to make sure the public gets to see everything across the video. A little bit of an improvement on the constituent experience, I think.
Fantastic. Good. Thanks for the additional work that the team did to put that together and for the additional transparency that provides. All right. I will call the meeting to a close. Thank you, everyone, for your time and attendance today.
Okay, staff, let's go ahead and end the recording and the streamings.